Hannah Thompson-Weeman, Vice President of Communications at the Animal Agriculture Alliance.
Hannah, tell me about a recent article that you wrote regarding livestock producers preparing themselves for activist protests, something that certainly isn't foreign to some farms, but it sounds like you're making the case that each and every livestock producer needs to have this on their radar at least.
It's really an unfortunate reality that in addition to all of the other stresses that go into being a farmer, of making ends meet, keeping animals healthy, managing your busy schedules and things like that, that you also have to have the thought in your back of your mind that you could be targeted by extreme activist groups. But unfortunately, that's what we're seeing happening, is activist groups increasingly trespassing on farms, stealing animals. And then at the end of May, there was a very alarming incident where hundreds of activists showed up on a California farm, and that farmer had to deal with a very stressful situation. And it's a challenge that we all have to potentially think through, of how would we handle it if 500 activists were bussed into our farm and tried to demand that we hand over our animals.
What does this preparation that you wrote about look like?
It starts with taking some basic security measures. So things like gates, locks on doors, motion sensor lighting, fences if possible, and just trying to make your farm a little bit less accessible and try to not be an easy target. So there's some very simple farm security measures that can be taken. No trespassing signs are also essential. You also need to reach out to local law enforcement and have a good relationship with them. Send them articles about these incidents and just let them know, you know, we hope this never happens here, but it's happened elsewhere. So what can we do to prepare? How can you help us? And what should we do if something like this happens?
You know, that it makes a lot of sense to take those steps. But at the same time, Hannah, is there some kind of a balance that livestock producers should strive for? Because they don't want to come off, I don't think, as somebody who is trying to hide anything from the public. You know what I mean?
It's a very big challenge. And I get questions about this whenever, you know, I speak places, because we talk both about being transparent and connecting with consumers, but also about the need to protect ourselves from activist groups. And there's a huge difference between our customers, our neighbors, and our consumers, who we absolutely need to be transparent. We need to show them what we do, welcome them as much as we can to share what we do in animal agriculture. But they're very different from these extremists who aren't interested in asking questions. They aren't interested in getting information. They're interested in seeing us all go out of business. So it's a very careful balance to strike, but absolutely, producers need to both make sure they're being transparent and open with people who really just want more information about our industry, while also protecting themselves from people who are only there to destroy our reputation.
What about interactions, whether they're face-to-face or perhaps on social media? You're a livestock producer who's passionate about the work that you do, but then you get an extremist who's also passionate about trying to alter or end the way of life for that livestock producer. What can the livestock producer do in those circumstances?
Well, in all cases, it's really important to figure out who the person is that you're talking to and kind of where they fall on the whole spectrum of the 2% of us that are engaged in animal agriculture versus the also very small percentage of the population, around 2 or 3% that are vegan, and even less than that for animal rights reasons and advocating for others to adopt that mindset. If you're connecting with someone who is not in that extremist mentality and they just might not know a lot about animal agriculture, or might have questions or misconceptions, you have a great opportunity to engage with them and answer their questions. But if you're dealing with somebody whose mind is made up, there's no room for open dialogue and conversation, then you just need to leave that interaction alone, especially if it's somewhere that you're in person with them, face-to-face, they're showing up to your property. Let law enforcement handle that. The last thing that we need is for there to be confrontation, there to be anger back and forth, because that's just going to make our industry look poorly and be poorly represented. And also keep in mind that they're usually live streaming these incidents on Facebook. So expressing your frustration is just not going to be a positive outcome. So avoid confrontation, avoid interaction in person, and let law enforcement handle that.
In your op-ed piece, you suggest a crisis plan. What should that plan look like?
Crisis planning is absolutely essential, no matter what size of business you are. I did crisis communications research when I was getting my master's degree, and I thought when I was working on my survey that the small producers wouldn't have them and the large ones would, but I was wrong. Really, small and large producers had plans, and the ones that had them and felt they were essential are ones that had dealt with crisis situations before, whether it's food safety or these activist issues or a natural disaster. There are a whole number of crisis situations that could impact your business, and that's why you need to take the time when you're not in a crisis to think through how to handle those situations. So a few essential components of that plan. One is figuring out who the key players are on your crisis team, your leadership, your communications people, people external to your company, anyone that you would need to reach out to in case of a crisis. You can also think through potential media statements, draft social media content. All of these things will have to be tweaked in the specific scenario, but just having some drafts down can save you a lot of time and allow you to react quickly. And the name of a crisis, reacting appropriately quickly, is the name of the game.
Hannah, anything else on this topic before we switch gears a little bit?
I would just encourage producers, we don't want you to feel like you have to be paranoid or you can't communicate about your farm and be transparent, but it's just being as vigilant as you can. So you can keep an eye on some of these groups that, if you know of them or local or active in your local area, a lot of times they use Facebook or social media to organize. So just be keeping an ear out for these things and just have it in the back of your mind. But don't let it stop you, again, from communicating and representing our industry.
With the Alliance, you are paying close attention to the opinions of consumers, and there are a lot of opinions regarding lab-grown meat. And at the Animal Ag Alliance, Hannah, how do you view that production system? What are you hearing from those in the livestock sector, but also from consumers that you visit with? There's a lot to unpack there, I know.
Well, this subject has been garnering a ton of conversation over the past few years, and it's actually kind of crazy the amount of media conversation and coverage this is getting compared to the size of the production, which is very small. It's not commercially available right now. It's really in kind of the testing phase. And from our perspective, there's going to be more and more global demand for meat. This could be some kind of niche product that people might want to purchase, probably a small percentage of the population. But our members, our farmers and ranchers, certainly aren't afraid of this. They're not scared. They're not intimidated. It could just be another competitor for the consumer's dollar. What we have concerns about is how these products are marketed, because a lot of the organizations that are promoting them are the same animal rights activist groups who we deal with on a variety of other topics. They just want to see animal agriculture be ended. They want to see farmers and ranchers out of business. And some of those groups see promoting these lab-grown meats as a way to accomplish that. So they are using all of the same myths and misinformation about animal agriculture to try to accomplish that goal. And that's what we have a lot of concerns about. If you want to market and promote the product on whatever its own merits might be, that's all well and good. But you don't need to disparage our entire industry to accomplish that. And that's why we'll have a lot of concern, especially with the term that those companies and organizations are trying to make take off, which is clean meat. Obviously, that kind of implies that real meat is dirty or bad for the environment in comparison, and then also tries to distance the product from the fact that it is cultured and grown in a lab, which a lot of consumers are very hesitant about trying when it comes to technology and food.
All right. I appreciate your comments on that, Hannah. Anything else you want to make sure we talk about today?
The only other thing I would note on the lab-grown meat is that there's getting to be more and more conversation. I mentioned the environmental impact as being a big message that activist groups are trying to promote. They're trying to say these products will have a lower environmental impact than animal agriculture. But really, we don't know that. We don't know what it would take energy-wise, water-wise, to produce these products at a scale that would replace or even compete in any kind of a significant way with conventional, traditional animal agriculture. So that's one talking point that we're hearing over and over again from these groups and companies, but we really don't know if that could be true. And we already know that livestock is responsible for around 4% of greenhouse gas emissions in the U.S. So we already know that we have a sustainable product, We are focusing on continuous improvement, and we always want to make sure we are being good stewards of the environment.